Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Drunk women solving crime.
Drunk women.
Drunk women solving crime.
Drunk women.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
This is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Taylor Glenn, and I'm a writer and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
As well as author and comedian Katie Wilkins.
Hello.
This is where beer meets breaking and entering, Prosecco meets perjury, and vodka meets vandalism. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime...
You gotta take small bites of death metal. I've always said that, and I stick to it.
We might have different tastes in porn.
Come on, Taylor, pull your socks up.
Who's stupid now?
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Drunk Women Solving Crime. This is a special episode for at least two reasons. One, we are recording from three different time zones. That's right. We're super international. We've got a guest who's in New Mexico. I'm in Pennsylvania. Go Steelers. And Katie and Hannah are in London. So this is pretty exciting. Woo!
Yay!
Get Wi-Fi. Go Wi-Fi, please hold on. We'll be fine. And the other reason is we are recording with a very special guest for our Men's Month. As you know, we carefully handpick just four men for every November. And this was one of our top picks. Don't tell the other guys. We have Nick Muhammad, who is an actor, comedian, and writer. Hello, Nick.
Yay! Hello. Hello. Thank
Welcome.
You for having me. Thank you very, very much for having me.
Thank you for coming.
And so this is part of Men's Month. Thank goodness it's a Men's Month, right?
We just thought, given them an opportunity, you know?
An opportunity to show. You know, people would never hear us otherwise, right?
So. Yeah, it's
Thank
not
the
fair.
Lord.
We're here as women to give men a voice occasionally. That's what we like to do. So, Nick, we always kick off the podcast the same way, and that is to ask our guests the question, have you ever been the victim of a crime?
I was thinking about this. I have been the victim of laptop theft.
Ooh.
On a Virgin train. Not to disparage Virgin. And it was apparently a very common occurrence. It was the Birmingham to London, Euston. And I should have clocked it because I got on and sort of got my laptop out and sort of started working. And then someone came, and even though it was quite a relatively empty carriage, because someone came and sat next to me, and the person, there was someone then outside the kind of window on the platform when I bought it at Birmingham, sort of telling them to sit next to where I was.
Oh, God.
Sort of pretty much pointing at the laptop, and I didn't really, I don't know why it didn't register. And then I just did the worst thing, which was I then sort of, you know, worked for like half an hour, and then put it all away, put it in the overhead compartment, and then just genuinely just went to sleep. Completely fast asleep, and woke up in Euston and was like, yeah. And I went to the British Transport Police, and they were like, oh yeah, were you on the Birmingham to London train? Oh yeah, yeah, no, that day, you'll never get it.
Oh my god.
Do you know what? I love the fact that somebody else just like works for an hour and it's like, I deserve a few hours sleep. Like, I love that. That's great.
And this was like before I'd had kids, so I mean, I've got no excuse to be tired in the middle of the day. It was like three in the afternoon. And there was that, and then there was also the time when I went on I was still at university, but I went with like sort of like a family friend and like sort of like a not sort of strict blood cousin, but kind of like effectively my cousin. We'd gone on a walking holiday with like part of a group in Bulgaria, and we were staying in this hotel. We'd sort of just checked in, and then a group of us went down to have some food in the hotel restaurant, and then came back up. And bearing in mind, we were like, you know, we were on like the fifth or sixth floor or whatever. We kind of came in, and the light was on, and we like remembered that we turned it off, and I'm like, that's weird. All the windows were open, so that in a kind of really sort of staged kind of way, and the curtains were kind of billowing out as if someone had kind of broke, and you know, loads of stuff had, and you know, loads of stuff had been taken, including a digital camera. And it was funny because they clearly tried to make it look like someone had kind of come through the window, but there was absolutely no way. Clearly someone with a hotel key had just, you know, with a master key had just come in, known that we'd all gone down to tea as a group.
Because you know, when you sneak in a window and then you open all the other ones just for some air.
Turn all the lights on and everything. And then the weirdest thing that really proved it was that I think the police were called, and then within the time of like the police being called, us noticing and the police being called, the camera had kind of then reappeared. It was such an inside job. And then we had to like stay at this hotel for like two nights, knowing that they just had access and we're just sort of like going through our stuff, just helping themselves to whatever.
Oh, man.
But we were very unfortunate because, you know, the good people of Bulgaria were wonderful, and, you know, it was just clearly someone who had a master key and was, I think, working at that hotel and sort of doing the rounds a little bit.
TripAdvisor, so you can't even go, it was nice apart from the theft.
apart from the big old theft.
And but so, still five stars because...
Great breakfast.
I know, it's always down to the breakfast. You could do anything, but if the breakfast buffet is good, I'm like, well, fair enough.
Yeah.
I slept in cockroaches, but then I had some very fresh fruit and a Belgian waffle. I don't know if we've ever... Because we've obviously had a lot of theft stories on here, as you can imagine. I don't know if we've ever had one where someone was sort of... freaked out or guilted, whichever one it was, into putting the item back. I don't think we've ever had a like, whoops, there it is.
I think they sort of clocked that they'd made it too obvious and were like, well, just put something back. And so someone had snuck back in and put something back and then come back out again. I don't know why they thought like the digital camera could suddenly be traced or something. Maybe they just had, well, maybe they worried that if they were searched or something, it would, you know, if the staff were searched, it'd be found, whereas kind of cash and things, which was the other thing that was taken, really.
That's what I was going to say. It's like what you do to kids when, like, if there's some money going, go, we're all going to turn around, and if the money could reappear, that would be great.
Exactly.
I'm very lucky. They're the only, touch wood, the only two... Oh, we had our artificial grass stolen during lockdown.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry, how does that happen?
Well, so we live in a flat, a first floor flat, and when it was lockdown, I've got my wife and two kids, and we, you know, obviously, like everyone, at the start of lockdown, sort of making do and sort of homeschooling and all that kind of thing. And
all the fun stuff.
But we didn't have a garden, but we had a driveway, which was shared with the other three people in the flat.
Okay.
And so we just like put a little bit of artificial grass, which we would roll up and put by the car. But we would then sometimes at lunchtime just sort of roll it out so the kids could just... I mean, it was ridiculous. It's just like, it was just like on a...
on a main,
not a main road, but just on a road where everyone could see. It's a bit
just
weird.
But get some outdoor time.
Yeah, and we quite liked it, and it was quite cute. And then yeah, it just got nicked like one day, like in the day. So we didn't see who took it, but it's really heavy as well. Like it was quite a heavy roll. So we hope it, and because the kids were young, they were like 2 and 4. So we didn't really want to tell them about sort of theft and burglary. Oh. So we were just like, oh, right. I think someone accidentally thought it was theirs and took it by accident. So yeah, I don't know what happened to that, but that definitely got taken. But other than that, I feel like I'm going to keep adding things to it.
Another thing. Yeah. Do you know what's funny though, is that of this trilogy of thefts, I feel the saddest about the grass.
I suppose technically
well, maybe it isn't the least valuable because that's probably quite expensive, but it isn't your typical, you know.
No, just, we were so surprised by it as well. We were like, oh, what a shame. And we just thought, well, we're not going to get any more now because it'll just go missing.
Yeah.
So that was a shame, but you know, there's a very small price to pay for, you know.
If you're listening, the person that took that, you've literally stolen two children's garden.
Yeah.
Like stealing a garden.
Lockdown.
Dick
move. I know.
You stole the tiny amount of outside joy that some tiny children could have.
I'd love it if they listened to this. Can you imagine if like thick criminals tuned in? Maybe they do. Have you been contacted by criminals?
It's going to happen at least once. We look forward to the day. Maybe this will be the one. Like, I am a fan and I am the garden thief.
Yeah. We do sometimes like offer up tips for criminals, don't we? Just sort of like, you know, ironically. But part of me thinks that you probably could get quite a few tips from our the true crimes that we cover. So like, guess how they did it? And it's like, what?
Yeah. And on telly as well. I remember some of those sort of more involved, like Jonathan Creek sort of plots where, you know, there was always and I always loved it because it was quite, you know, like magic and stuff, and I'm a big magic fan. And, you know, I would always think, well, that is literally telling someone else to get away with the perfect crime, like every episode.
It's just tips,
Yeah, I used to love that.
TV and film for like how to dispose of a body. Like, thanks, Breaking Bad. I'll make sure I get the right container,
get the right type of plastic. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing all of those stories. We always offer the guest an opportunity to say, if you had the perpetrator in the room, you can say anything to them or ask them anything. So you can pick any which one of these perps. What would you say or do or ask?
It's to the person or people who stole the grass. And I think I would say, I think we've made peace with it. And I would just like to know that at least they're getting good use out of it. Like, I hope that it's gone to good use. Like, in my head, part of me was like, maybe it's like someone who's homeless who's taken it and it's like you could lay on it and it's comfy or something. I genuinely thought that maybe that was because I just thought, well, why would you steal a really specific, because if you had a garden, you wouldn't really need it. And it's a very specific shape and size. So I thought, you know, and you're not going to be able to really sell it on. And so, because it's a very kind of, you know, specific thing to sell. So I hope it's just been put to good use, I think, is my main message.
Oh, man, I think you might be right, you know.
Maybe, sadly. But yeah. I would take it off him if I saw him. Yeah, I'm really kidding.
That's so weird.
Take it back.
Oh my gosh, like Ghostbusters when they pull the tablecloth. Unless there's some weird black market for artificial grass. Like, I'm always surprised what people can sell.
Well, there's
like
a market for everything. Like, when we lived in Shepherd's Bush, if you wanted to get rid of furniture, you just put it outside your gate and like within an hour, someone had taken it.
Oh yeah, we did
like
that.
Most
without
of the
even
time.
Having a without even having a note on it to say please take.
No, not even a note. Yeah, like my boyfriend did that with a box of his old CDs. Nobody wanted them. I'm not saying his taste is bad, but it's you know, nobody wanted them.
No one's got a CD player.
Yeah, well, there's that
can't
as well,
play
isn't
them.
There?
Although I love CDs still.
Do you?
I love popping on a CD, yeah, on an evening when the kids are down. I love popping on a CD, like doing a little clear up to a CD. We've got them all out on display in quite a sort of 90s way. We've got one of those racks. I mean, you know, like Spotify is obviously great and you can just choose anything and it's wonderful. And, you know, you even get alerted when there's new releases and stuff. And you literally don't have to go out and buy a new CD if you don't want to. But there was something so special about it. And I've got, and I like just bought them. It's all I really spent money on when I was like a kid and a student and stuff. You know, that's what you'd save up for.
Yeah,
and there's a new, not new, but there's a company in America called Entrada, which are this label that have started re-recording and re-releasing old movie soundtracks, like from, like not old, but like from the 80s and stuff, like real massive symphonic scores that they've just re-released. And you can only get them on CD, and they're amazing. Like they're really like properly remastered, and I love it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So I feel for your boyfriend, basically. I feel for him.
So every time we get a hire car, I'm like, you can bring two CDs with you.
He has a limit. And like, were they all like death metal?
Yeah, it was kind of death metal stuff.
Yeah,
right.
I know this because my husband went with Hannah's fiance to a death metal concert. So I was just picturing a whole box. It's hard to take a whole box. It's just you got to take small bites of death metal. I've always said that, and I stick to it.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
Right. Guys, are we ready to move on to our case for this episode?
Yes, please.
Yeah. The day that you guys go, we're going to be in a very awkward
situation. I kind of want to talk about grass some more.
let's keep talking about turf. Now I'm going to go on eBay and see if people sell. Well, they sell everything on there.
They will.
These are the kind of things I do when I'm at my parents' house. Here we go, guys. Our case starts with a newsboy called Jimmy. I was very nearly going to say, like all good porn, and then I remembered that like a newsboy would have been really young, so we shouldn't cut that out. Just don't.
Also, we might have different tastes in porn.
We might have different tastes in porn.
Wait, does your porn start with a newsboy, one of the people that says
Jimmy?
A newsboy called Jimmy, and I was like, because you can sort of say like all the best porn to everything, but you shouldn't say it when it's like a boy. That's wrong. Like I've kicked us off with really questionable. It starts with a newsboy called Jimmy, and he's but Jimmy's a good kid. Jimmy delivers a paper called the Brooklyn Eagle in an apartment building in New York. He's paid in change by his customers, and when he leaves the building, he notices something strange about one of the nickels. Your first question is, what do you think was unusual about the nickel?
Double-sided.
Okay.
Oh, like a kind of magic trick type thing.
Like a magic-y one.
Ooh, yeah. That's good. I was going to say maybe it's got like a bullet hole, like, you know, at the edge of it or something.
Okay. That's a good guess.
Go on, Nick.
I've got another guess, but it might just be the date on the coin is in the future.
Oh, I really want it to be that.
Yeah, I want it to be that.
That's the best opener for a TV show. Like, you just hold on to that, Nick. I don't know what that show's about. But, man, that's really eerie and cool. I like that. Hannah, George, any thoughts?
And I was going to say, oh, is it like a nickel from another country? Which, of course, doesn't exist because nickels are American. So we've had a really cool answer and a really dumb answer.
But it could be like a 5p or that's not a good equivalent. But like whatever similar shape coin.
Yeah, foreign currency. I think maybe it's,
could be mistaken.
No answers are dumb answers in the drunk women forest.
We'll see.
I'll do my best. Well, Nick, you got it the first time. What felt weird about it to him is that it was too light. So he could tell it wasn't a real coin.
Ah.
So I've written the door. What is wrong with me? I've written the newsboy fingers it for a little while. He handles it. What is wrong with me? He handles it for a little while, and then he accidentally drops it onto the pavement. What happens to the nickel when he drops it onto the pavement?
Cracks in half?
It cracks in half.
Ooh.
More importantly, what is inside of this nickel that has two sides that has opened? What do you think is inside?
Like a little slip of paper or something.
Yeah, in Russian.
Okay.
Is it a dollar? That would be weird.
I really folded up dollar.
Yes!
can I ask when this is set? Not
that
set,
is...
but when did it happen?
That is two questions from now. I will ask you what year you think this is.
Oh, okay. Okay. Because I was going to say, are there drugs in it? Like, it's like cocaine inside it or something?
Ooh. Okay. That's a good guess.
What would you... It's, if it's a tiny note, it's got to be... It could be spies... It could, or it, maybe it's like a fortune cookie.
A photo.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like a little pendant, you know, like a pendant necklace kind of can open up and inside is a photo.
Yeah.
Right, right. Hannah, have you got a dumb answer for us before I reveal?
I did say a dollar. That counts as dumb for me.
No, I think that'd be great. I'd love a dollar in my nickel. Are you kidding? Well, you guys were all onto it, really. I don't know who said this first, but there's a tiny piece of microfilm inside.
Holy shit.
Yes. So we'll get to exactly what's on that microfilm in a moment. But my next question is, what do you think Jimmy does with this? Does he hand it in? Does he keep it? What does he do with this little discovery on his paper route?
We know nothing about him, but you said he's a good kid. So maybe he... Wait, well,
but
maybe
talked about porn, so it's hard to...
Yeah, he's a good horny kid. maybe he takes it to the newspaper where, you know, there's journalists that can do investigative journalism with it.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's a really
good
answer.
Or the local library, you know, like a library where you can look one of those machines, which I don't know how... I've never, ever used one, but they always look really cool.
Are they cool to use? One?
Yeah, I used to work at an insurance company that had really old records, and we had to get them out to check what people had agreed back in the olden days or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't fun. It was really laborious and boring. I hated that job.
It was. But did a part of you feel like, I'm Clarice Starling?
Yeah, for about 5 minutes.
Silence of the Lambs for 5 minutes. Okay.
And then it was like, God, I want to go.
Just because it's always the, like, you know, the dramatic score when that's happening.
Yeah.
I found it. But yours was like, fire insurance, no.
It was like, that's not included.
Not included.
Put everything back away again.
I think if this was like an 80s movie, I think he'd jump on his bike and he'd take it home to his older brother who's at home getting somewhere with a girl in his bedroom.
Yeah.
And he'd interrupt and he'd be like, I'm doing something here. And he'd be like, look what I found. And then the girl would know what the microfiche was. No, of course she wouldn't because it was an 80s movie. She would just go, what?
She doesn't even have lines.
And is a microfilm the same as like a micro... Is the microfiche the name of the thing? Because I realize I've said microfiche now and
That's a good question, because I've always said microfiche, but my source kept saying microfilm, and I don't know.
Okay.
And often when I look up AstroTurf market, I will also look this up for you.
It's ages since I worked at this job, so I can't help either.
So Hannah's got... I like this. You've got the whole cinematic thing. Well, I'll tell you what he does. He keeps it to show his friends. Because to him, it's like a magic trick. He's just found a prop, right? So he's showing everybody this. But one of his friends happens to be the daughter of an NYPD officer. So while he's over at her house, he goes, ooh, all right. So he tells the department about this. What do the police do with this information?
I'd say they just toss it aside and not pay any attention.
I'm going to go opposite. They beat up Jimmy and say that he's in on it and arrest him, and then they destroy the pictures of them beating him up, and then...
Poor Jimmy.
Yeah.
He's not had the best of starts, has he?
He's not. Not in my film version.
We've tried to give him a more colourful role. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
I think perhaps what they did is I'm going to go in between Kate and Nick, and I think that maybe...
a light slap.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They just gave him a wedgie. It was fine. The police do that a lot. I think maybe they went to the building that Jimmy gave the newspapers to, and they knocked on some doors, and they sort of saw if anyone came out looking like a spy or something.
Actually, that's a really good shout. They would put eyes on the building, wouldn't they?
Maybe.
And just observe it for a bit. Also, somebody's in trouble for losing this coin, aren't they?
Presumably.
Well, yes. Hannah, you're correct. They went and questioned all the people in the apartment building.
Yes.
None of them showed,
Who's dumb now?
Yeah.
But stay tuned, people. It's all to play for.
It's a roller coaster.
So yeah, they went and questioned everybody, and they were, you know, what are you talking about? We just had change. We have no idea what you mean. They storm into Jimmy's house and they confiscate the coin and they send it to the FBI for immediate inspection. So now your question is, what year do you think this is?
Oh, now when was the FBI set up?
That's we do know this.
It's a boring question, isn't it?
It's round about the Prohibition, isn't it?
Not
isn't
to
it
us. Like,
yeah, God, is it 1930s?
I think it was like turn of the century, but it wasn't called the FBI initially.
Yeah, when it the point where it became the, because before it was just the Federal Bureau or something, wasn't it?
Or it was like the LBI. It was like,
Jesus
local.
Christ, I've literally done a case that involved the year that the FBI became called the FBI, and I can't tell you a thing about it.
Well, they are the FBI at this point.
Yeah.
They're definitely called the FBI.
Okay. Well, the technology is gone.
I think the idea of a paper boy sort of delivering papers and being paid in cash by the individuals rather than by like a, you know, I don't know.
Like a tab at the shop.
Like a tab at the shop, yeah. Feels quite a bit old. So I'm going to like guess somewhere like in the 70s, maybe. I don't know if it like 70s.
Okay.
I think because you didn't say that he immediately sort of made a TikTok about it, I don't think it's that modern. Because I know all about what the kids get up to. But yeah, it feels old. It's like the new, like you say, the like the paper boy and the even that kind of like the microchip or microfilm thing.
Yeah.
That feels quite sort of maybe almost wartime, maybe 40s. Uh-huh. I'm gonna go 1940s.
See,
or Cold War, maybe let's go a bit later. 1960s.
Okay.
I was gonna say 40s. It definitely feels like Cold War secrets or like, you know, some kind of...
Like a... I try to think if there's any more clues in what you've said, Taylor.
Yeah. It's... Do we know where Jimmy lives?
This is all in New York.
Oh, it's in New York.
He's in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And he went to school and he showed his friends and then it was the daughter of an NYPD person.
Yep.
Nah, I mean, that doesn't point towards anything.
Actually, yeah, that makes it feel like it can't be the... Okay, it can't be the 40s.
What? Why?
Because you wouldn't be hanging out with your friends. You'd be at war.
America joined the war quite late, though.
Yeah,
all right, Nick, we get it. So sick of this.
Yeah, come on, Taylor, pull your socks up.
We showed up late, but we did a lot.
They showed up late, but with awesome...
You ended the war.
Yeah.
I will just tell you, unless you want to give a specific year, Katie.
All right, 1955, the year Doc Brown invented time travel.
Shit, you're close. It's 1953.
Oh, okay.
Good. Nice. That's great.
Very well done. It is the Cold War. It's Cold War time, kids. Pull up your Budweiser and your borscht. Let's do this. By the way, my main source for this case, I read a couple, but it's FBI.gov, and they have all of their like historical cases typed out like Wikipedia style. And I love using it because they are so shamelessly biased. Like there's always lines like the FBI agents worked tirelessly and cleverly and like sexy like all night long. Like they just compliment themselves constantly and talk about how great America is. Like America's awesome in every case.
Wow.
So it's a bit of fun. So the coin goes off to the FBI labs. They discover that it's made from two different nickel halves which have been joined together. On the front, there's a tiny hole drilled into the word trust through the letter R, and that was actually meant to use a pin to pry it open, but when he dropped it broke open, and that's not how it was supposed to work. More importantly than how you open it, what do you think is found on the microfilm? What is it?
Like a nuclear bomb or the location.
An actual bomb or a picture of
one? Yeah, like, you know, it's like a picture of like
a picture.
The flux capacitor that makes the bomb. I've been doing Back to the Future.
I'm with you. Katie has just seen the Back to the Future musical, guys, if you're wondering.
Oh, was it good? Is it really good?
It's really good. like, it's one for the fans. Like,
yeah,
if you like Back to the Future, you will sit there grinning the whole way through. And, like, the audience are mega fans, and they just, like, cheered at all their favourite lines.
Oh, brilliant. Okay. Is it the first film that they do?
Or yeah, it's all the first film.
Oh, it's all about the first. That's good.
It's completely... And the guy that...
I think I trust somebody who doesn't like Back to the Future. There are very few films I'll say that about, but I don't understand if you don't like Back to the Future. That's right. I've put that out.
Yeah. I think that's fair enough.
Saying the tough things. I don't even remember what my question was. I wrote... What is the it tiny was what's hole on the for? I skipped that.
What's on the microfilm?
What's on the microfilm?
A map.
Map is a good... Like, the details of how to get to a secret location or something.
Very good show.
Or a photo of someone they want to assassinate.
Ooh, that's good too.
Good guess.
I feel like some... I mean, I've watched enough spy movies.
It's
going to
be a message, hasn't it? Go on.
Well, maybe it's like a list of names. Often, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like
who's in the cell or something, or who's going to be killed.
Okay, you are all thinking along the right lines. It's a numerical code. It's numbers only, and there are 10 columns. There are 10 columns of typed digits. That's all it is. Does the FBI crack the code after they receive this coin?
No, I think they have to send it off to someone.
Yeah, they have to bring in an expert.
Turing or something.
Is
Turing still knocking around then?
Yes, it wasn't until the 70s, was it? Was it the 60s
he
or the 70s?
He committed suicide, bless him, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah,
probably. Or was it, like, would it be the NSA who would crack codes? They're the equivalent of GCHQ, aren't they?
Yeah, there'll be a branch.
Weirdly, I think because they didn't think this was going to fall into the wrong hands, I don't know whether or not they used, not like a really, really simple cipher or whatever, they created something that wasn't actually, I like to think maybe the FBI did crack the code, and this whole thing was a massive fuck off on like behalf of the person that lost the nickel, who was kind of like, literally, I can imagine him running for a train and was like, oh, fancy a coffee, I'll just buy it, and then suddenly it goes into circulation. And also,
and
there's
that's
nothing
why
to
I'm not a spy. That's the only reason.
Also, there's nothing to say that this nickel hasn't been in circulation for 20 years, really, in a way. It just hasn't been
dropped. Really outdated. It could even be an American nickel that was going to trick someone. You know, it could be their own people.
Drunk women solving crime.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I will tell you, at this point, the FBI are unable to crack the code, even though they worked tirelessly and cleverly and sexy-like all through the night. But they knew that the message couldn't have been made in America. Why is that?
Because America doesn't have the number 4 or something.
Is it to do with the Russian alphabet? Is the Russian alphabet got a different number of letters? No, because it's numbers, alphabet, you say.
Yeah, the Russian alphabet's definitely different. Numbers? I don't know.
Or it's in Roman numerals and not enough Americans know.
No, these are good. These are really good guesses.
I'm not 100% sure what a microfilm is, but is it something to do with like the production of that, like the type of thing that it's...
Well, it says
made in Taiwan on it.
So it's taking something that's life-size, like a newspaper article, a photo, anything. In this case, it's a typed message that's been transferred onto a very, very, very small piece of microfilm to be viewed in a film.
How could you tell it's not American?
Is it something to do with the font or like the...
Oh. Ding, ding, ding! Hannah George!
Who's stupid now? very nearly fell off my chair at that point. I felt myself slipping because I spam round to try and look cool.
You shouldn't have held back because that was perfect timing. It was the typeface. They couldn't find a single American typewriter that could have produced digits
cool
like these. Yeah.
Interesting.
The FBI does, however, find the source of the coin, which blows this case wide open. But it's not because of anything they did. It's because they get a phone call 4 years later after this coin has been turned in. Who might call them that would blow this case wide open?
The person in the building who's, like, found a dead body.
Jimmy the paperboy?
Ooh, Jimmy the newsboy.
Old Jimmy.
Yeah. Jimmy.
Oh, Jimmy.
He's now legal for Taylor. I'm sorry.
Who could it be? I mean, did we ascertain like what country it was from?
No.
Yeah. No, we don't know what country.
We've eliminated America.
I have not confirmed it, but we know it's the Cold War.
Because I just wondered if it was like a world leader or something. Because, you know, if you're going to blow the case wide open, they might be like, have you seen our nickel anywhere? Just lost one, mate.
Hey, it's Khrushchev here. Quick question.
Oh, yeah, I dropped that. That's mine.
Unless is it related to like the space program?
Oh, yeah.
Because this would be about 1960 now, if this is like
four years
later
after 53.
55.
So it's only 57 now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so the moon landing was 69. So, yeah, maybe it's a little early.
When Sputnik, was that 57?
It's late 1950s, wasn't it? Or was it early 1960s? Late 1950s, like 58?
It was late 50s, Sputnik, I'm sure. Mm.
This is where I have to go, Nick. I really love intelligence.
Oh, that's so nice of you to say that. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, I love it. I will tell you who calls, because this is a really tough question. I would never get this. I always ask the questions I can never answer. That's half the fun of the podcast. The call is from a Soviet spy who had been operating in the U.S. for years, working under the KGB. But now he's been in the U.S. so long that he wants to defect. So he decides to basically turn himself in. The guy, he has a taste for American processed cheese, and he can never go back to Kostromskoy.
Yeah. He loves
that
capitalism.
That's the most niche joke I've ever written. I looked up Russian cheeses.
I'm sorry, I talked over it.
No, it probably made it better. Female workplace. So the man who calls is called, sorry for this pronunciation, he's from Finland, and his name is Raino Heihanen. I don't know why I did a H, why did a Heihanen. Finnish listeners, let me know how I should have said that. He had been born into a very poor family in Finland, but showed exceptional ability in school. He had been recruited by the Soviets as a young man during the Finnish-Soviet War, which I'm obviously an expert about, but we just don't have time to get into my knowledge.
Sure.
Yeah. DM me, guys. DM me. But basically, Rhino's job was to rout out anybody who was working against the Soviets. So question, how did Rhino manage to move to the United States undetected?
Ooh.
So he's a KGB agent operating in the US before he turns himself in.
Yes. So he had been born in Finland, recruited by the Soviets, had worked in Moscow for a while, and then he managed to move to the US. How does he do that?
Sneak in a boat like Paddington Bear, filled with marmalade.
Okay. Yes, Katie, but it's filled with Kostromskoy. I got to go back to the cheese, so it was all worth it.
Sorry, Nick, go ahead.
No, you go, Hannah. You go,
I just wondered whether it was like, because like you say, he's really, like, he's kind of super intelligent. So I don't know whether he kind of went over on some kind of, not exchange program, but on, you know, he got a job, potentially something that really needed his expertise in the way that, you know,
legitimately.
Yeah, and when you were talking about the space race and NASA was sort of bringing a lot of people in for the war from Germany or whatever.
Yeah.
So
he's got,
could be something
like
that.
Key skills or something.
Right. Very good guess. Any other thoughts before I reveal?
The only other one I thought possibly connected to that, what Hannah said, was like hunting sort of Nazis. You know how there was then, you know how a lot of Nazis fled to, well, South America, I guess, and then there was a contingent of people who tried to track them down.
Ooh.
I'm imagining that's not the right answer from your reaction.
No, but good.
It was very difficult at that. You obviously can't just show up with a Russian passport and get into the US at this time. So you had to assume the identity of a real person.
But also, hasn't he got a Finnish passport?
But that's no good because he's in the Soviet...
Okay, sorry.
...little enclave of Finland. And he needs a completely new identity. Like,
sure.
He can't be...
Oh, he takes on a dead person's identity.
Well, what he does, very close, he takes on an American citizen's identity, an American family. The KGB located a family who had left and lived in Estonia because they liked the sound of, and this is the FBI.gov, the new Russia. And then, I mean, I'm sure it wasn't actually very nice there, but it's just funny on the FBI site. They're like, and they soon realized they'd made a horrible mistake leaving the US of A, but they stayed. So he took on the identity of their son, and the KGB trained him to do an American accent. Accent and the mannerisms and everything, and he had to learn this guy's history, like, just in case he happened to, he wasn't even in the same region they were from, but just in case someone said, oh my god, I know your family, he had to be able to go like, yes, I liked baseball. I would love to be on a fly on the wall when they're teaching somebody to be American. Really great. Hi, folks. I hate Russians. Who wants some beef jerky? So the FBI offered Rhino immunity in return for any information he could give them about Soviet activity. Rhino cooperates, and he gives up information about the operatives that he'd been in touch with since he'd been working in New York, including one who went by the name of Mark. So Mark and Rhino had had lots of meetings, but never in Mark's home. And obviously his real name isn't Mark, so he doesn't know anything about this guy. All he's able to give is a physical description and any of the meeting locations, you know, where they've met up. So does the FBI find Mark? Are they able to track down this operative?
Yes, sure. Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's interesting. Elaborate on that, Hannah.
I just don't know whether, was he just found doing something really un-American, or his accent slipped, like at the end of The Great Escape or whatever. Is it The Great Escape? Where he accidentally just says something not in a German accent. Is that right?
I'm or like mad. Someone also, called him by his Russian name and he turned around and he was like, oh, shit.
That'd be a good way.
Where he does the fork wrong? He does the fork like Europeans and, well, I think the rest of the world do, but we do a really weird thing with our fork where we switch hands, and that's in a film where that's where they find him out, because he switches his hand, or he doesn't switch his hand, and they're like, not an American. Anyway, what a fun story.
There's a great I should say, I think at this point that maybe him confessing all this to the FBI, I think maybe he's a double. Or would that make him a triple? Would that make him a triple agent?
He could be setting himself up to be a double agent, sure. Like,
okay. Yeah.
Yes,
triple. That is double, isn't it? I genuinely get confused.
Yeah, and he's going to...
That is a double agent, isn't it? Yeah.
Because otherwise, double. He's going to be...
triple, I can't go that far. That's like, I can't divide more than...
Triple's just the same as a normal just... one, isn't it?
Yeah, that brings
you
back to...
You go all the way back around.
The odd numbers are all the same, isn't it? Just if you're
they double dared him back, and then he triple dared back... And then if he hadn't...
triple is when someone finds out you're double, but then you pretend that
you... And you just go, you don't have the classification. You don't even know who I report to. So don't poison me. It's all legit.
Katie, do you think the FBI found Mark? You said yes. Hannah, what did you say? You think they did?
I think they did, yeah.
Okay.
I think they maybe found him dead.
Oh, that's... Now we're cooking. That's some plot.
Okay.
That's what I think.
Well, do the FBI find Mark? You bet your ass the FBI found Mark.
Is he dead?
Him. He's not dead.
Oh.
No. No, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry.
That's not very Hollywood.
Oh, it really isn't. So Rhino had been taken to a storage space full of, I don't know, spy things. I didn't write them all down, but you can picture it. Spy things. So the FBI thought this was probably their best chance at catching him. So they camp out across from the building for weeks until a light finally goes on. But then they have to get Rhino to ID him, so they can't just arrest him on the spot. They follow him around and they take photos, but Rhino IDs him. So Mark, this operative, is arrested. He reveals that his real name is Rudolf Ivanovich Abel. He's a Russian spy and he's a colonel of the KGB. They raid his apartment and they find just a... So this guy was higher up than Rhino was. They find this treasure trove of spy goods. Spy goods. That's a name for the film. Spy goods. Including coins, which looked identical to the one that Newsboy Jimmy...
I mean, that's just a nickel, though, right? They just found some nickels. Like, they all look identical. Like, that's the whole point of currency.
They were hollow nickels.
Okay.
Yeah. So Rhino testifies against Abel in the trial. Abel's convicted of several counts of espionage and he's sent to prison. Side note in this case, and I guess the FBI doesn't think this is the kind of stuff we want to know, but Rhino was married when he was in the U.S., but under his alias, and I could not find out, like, what happened to his marriage when he decided to turn himself in? Because his wife obviously didn't know that he was a spy. Like, what happened? What happened with his wife? No one says. So if anyone can find this out, listeners, if you find out what happened with the marriage, I would like to know.
Yeah.
Really would. And that leads me to just a personal question, which is, could you stay with your partner if you found out they were a spy?
Yes, if, you know, if they just still acted the same as they'd been acting.
Yeah, if it didn't interfere with the marriage.
Yeah, I guess that's not really your question.
That's actually the best answer I could have imagined, though. Like, this accent isn't working for me. Like, as long as you can keep the same persona.
I don't want to have to get into all the nitty-gritty. Like, I'm not, you know.
Yeah, like, do you still want to watch Strictly or not?
Yeah.
Exactly. As long as they still do all the kind of mundane thing, you know.
The facade, yeah.
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 You know, you're a music teacher and, you know, you kind of, yeah. Yeah. Because that's what you signed up to.
It's got to be 60% the same. Any higher than that, and it just feels like a sham.
Yeah.
Could you imagine as well if you were like having an affair and then you find out and you're like, you're fucking what? You're a spy. And how much do you know about me? Or I love the idea that his wife was having several affairs and he was just so like distracted by doing like big Russian spying that he didn't notice what was happening close to home.
Is that the plot of True Lies? The Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis film, where he is a spy, but then he suspects that she's having an affair, but actually it turns out that she's a spy as well, maybe, or something like that. It's quite convoluted in that kind of way, but it's great. It's a good film.
I remember liking it. I haven't seen
that
in years.
That is the best like striptease scene in any film, you know, when she it's silly because they make her look sort of dowdy and then she's like, what if I wet my hair back? And like, she's the most amazing figure. It's like, surprise.
It's about like your partner was wearing a wire the whole time you were sleeping with them and you didn't notice.
I think it would be a bit of fun. It would liven things up, depending on the country that they're spying for. Sure, ethics. So with Rhino's guidance, the FBI finally decode the message in the coin, because he obviously knows how to do that. That coin was indeed intended for Rhino. It had just never been collected on a dead drop, so it found its way into circulation for a couple years.
Wow.
What do you think the message was about?
Don't trust this guy. He's about to turn against us all.
Your wife's having an affair.
Was it about the president?
Yeah. Hey, we're going to do a Sputnik. Get ready.
Get ready for our Sputnik.
Wait till Rocky IV. It's going to be amazing.
I should say at this point that I got handed in change a magnetic pound coin. Like years ago, like in like 2012.
Ooh.
And they're used in close-up magic effect. Like, the thing you're describing is a shell. Like, and you get them all the time where you can do, like, what appears to be making coins change, but actually you've got a magnet in one hand and then it removes the shell from another, which is magnetic, and it looks like a quick change of a coin. And there's all things like that that kind of exist on the sort of magic market, I guess. But I once got handed, and the only way that a pound coin could have been magnetic is that a magician accidentally spent it. And they're expensive. They're like, you know, they're quite, you know, they're like sort of, probably a magnetic pound coin is like sort of 50 quid or something. Like, it's kind of...
Oh, my gosh.
And I've got it, and it's on like the radiator at home.
You just
throw it in the air, and it goes like that and sticks onto the radiator.
I thought
it must be like lucky or something. And so, yeah, we got a magnetic pound coin.
Of course you would hold on to it. But now, don't you sort of want to crack it open and see if there's some microfilm in there?
Yeah, maybe now there is. Yeah,
have a look. Don't do it. There's nothing in there, and you'll just be sad. Don't do it.
That's so cool, though, that it kind of like it fell into the hands of someone who knew what it was, because
And I've never used it for like magical purposes, but I appreciated its value and have kept it.
I remember
only realizing, because I'd gone to like Sainsbury's or something and got it, and then I took out my keys to unlock the door to go in, and it was just stuck to the key, and I was like,
fun. I love it. Probably so many people had seen it stick and they're like, stupid pound coins, like, didn't think
can't wait to get rid of this.
They're getting cross at vending machines that won't take it.
Keeps getting stuck in the slot.
I remember there was a show when I was a kid called The Queen's Nose, and that was all about a 50p piece that you rubbed its nose, the Queen's nose, and you made a wish. And
the Queen appeared.
I spent my childhood just rubbing 50p pieces.
Yeah, me too. Like,
Not a single big wish. The big ones.
Do you remember the big ones? The really size of like a Satsuma. They're absolutely massive.
So was that a thing that people would wish upon a coin because of the show?
Well, kids did, I think.
Sounds like it.
That's really sweet.
Coins have got that property. I like, you know, wishing well and stuff. You know, I can... make a wish. It's that kind of thing when you... Yeah, even when you like shake dice and blow on them, like I think you do that with coins and
superstition about trying to get money.
Yeah,
guys,
I guess
I'm really
that's what
glad
it is.
That you've come with me on this coin journey, and you've been as excited as I was about this. This is really good. Well, I'm amongst friends. I will tell you what the message was, because it's a bit silly. It was supposed to be his very first welcome message to the United States, and he never got it.
That's hilarious.
It's really funny. So you can read the entire message, but it's quite long, and there's some, you know, they get into business a little bit, but it's really like, welcome to the US, you know, soon we'll start sending you,
and he gets to read it in prison.
Well, no, because this is Rhino. This is a guy
that dubbed in the other
got
guy
immunity. Yeah, so the other guy has been put away. He's, you know, presumably safe.
So maybe if he'd have got this message, he wouldn't have defected, because he'd have felt welcome.
He literally wrote that down, because I was like, he just didn't feel welcome by the KGB in the US.
But how did he realise that he had missed this message? Was it in the next one? Was it like, oh, I hope you got our last message? kind of like...
As you know from the last message.
Yeah, as you'll recall, this is how we're going to be doing this from now on.
Per my last coin mail.
Yeah. As you will know already now.
Visit
from having opened your
minutes.
Other nickel.
Just because I was keeping an eye on time, I kept out a little section where these two guys, so I'll say it now, Mark and Rhino, used to do dead drops to each other. And there was one in a tiny container that the drop location in Brooklyn was in a tiny hole in a set of cement steps in Brooklyn. But the last one was never collected because the city decided to do improvements and they cemented it in.
Oh wow.
He told the FBI about this, so they drilled it up, and it literally translated. It sounds like a text message, like, you didn't meet me at 8 o'clock, is everything okay?
Wow.
Yeah, it's just kind of, I didn't know they had such mundane, like, I thought you'd save the dead drops for really big stuff, but it's like, I missed you at tea. Where were you?
we were there thinking it was going to like nuclear plans or an assassination attempt. It's like, yeah. It's hope you banal. Like your apartment. Or, yeah.
Yeah, it's just HR getting in touch.
It is, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah. Really, they really, yeah, they just had a bit of a chat.
Spies
sometimes.
Are humans too.
Oh, they are. Oh. So that brings us almost to the end of the case, but I will say, a final note, Rudolf Ivanovich Abel, who went by Mark, who got put away because of Rhino, was eventually traded back to the Soviets in exchange for an American prisoner called Francis Gary Powers. So he did not remain in an American prison because a lot of these trades were done. And this is what the movie Bridge of Spies is about.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So,
nice.
To round this out, all's well that ends with a Tom Hanks movie.
Yes.
Drunk women solving crime.
We're going to finish out the episode with a listener crime. So this has been emailed to us from Felix Michael Olsen Bergquist, who's from Sweden. Hope it's okay. I read all four of your names. That's how you signed off the email. So I assume that's okay.
Three different people with the same.
Yeah. It's a great name. I just wanted to say, I'm sure I fucked up the last one. Sorry about that, Felix. Or Felix. He wants us to help him decide if he was the victim of a crime or not. So he says he was visiting a town called Uddevalla. This is still in Sweden. And they had a really cool antique bookshop that I wanted to visit where you could only pay cash. So I had to stop by an ATM. Just as I had withdrawn 300 kroner, a very large and intimidating man walked up very close to me with a pamphlet about some charity organization. He didn't say a single word to me, but it was clear what he wanted me to do. So I gave him one of the 100 kroner bills in my hand, which is about £9. He then looked at me sternly, placed a firm hand on my shoulder, and nodded at the rest of the money in my hand. Did I mention that he was very large and intimidating? Well, I am the opposite of that. Compared to him, I looked like a malnourished 12-year-old child. So I gave him another 100 kroner, his grip on my shoulder tightened, and he nodded at my hand again. But at this point, I decided it wasn't fair of him to ask for more. So I shook my head and said, no, that's enough now. The man squeezed my shoulder one last time and made an angry little grunting sound, which was the only sound he made during our entire interaction, and then he walked away. Was this a crime? Was I robbed? Or would he have left me alone if I had just said no as soon as he walked up to me?
Ooh. Hmm. Well, I don't like the idea of, for a start, any stranger putting their hand on me. Like, that feels like a thing that you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
Also, at an ATM. Mm.
And grunting as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Unless there's, like, a medical reason why he couldn't spit. But like, grunting sort of seems a bit...
aggressive.
You know, a bit aggressive, yeah. I mean, grunting, you'd think grunting is... sort of like an animal from, you know.
Yeah. It could be an intimidation tactic.
Yeah. Because of the crime.
It feels like the guy almost has plausible deniability, doesn't he? Because it's kind of like, if it came to it, he could be like, all I did was hold his shoulder and point at his money. Like, he
and
gave
I have
it
this
to
pamphlet.
Me.
Yeah.
Like, it's not my fault. He's scared of my grunting.
I have had interactions with people who are legitimately collecting for charity, and they've never gotten physical with me. But you know what I mean? Like, because I think that's a really hard job to have to, that people are still on the street trying to get your attention. And I've had them sort of like touch my shoulder, not as aggressively as this guy, but I've had them like touch me to get my attention, and they're pretty in your face. So I'm not comparing this to like Oxfam workers. You're doing a great job. But I can almost believe that he just was a really intense charity worker.
Yeah.
If it weren't for
possibly.
The grunting and the, I don't know, the squeezing.
It's too much, even for, like, he really wanted to hit his targets.
why didn't he speak? Maybe it's not rude to ask that, but why didn't he...
No, it's a good question, because it's one thing, as you say, if he was unable, but it's another thing...
Yeah.
I don't know if it was a language barrier or if it was... Who knows? We don't... What I want to know is what was in the pamphlet. Was it like a handwritten, it just said charity in crayon? Or was it like a legitimate organization? That's the part.
I remember once being stopped by a charity worker outside, outside King's Cross? And they fucked it up immediately because I remember what they said. They said, excuse me, sir. And I was like, okay, no, right, that's fine. Like, literally, then I don't know what I think. I was just walking past them too quick, and I just turned around to them and just went, come on. And she went, oh, I'm sorry.
I remember one of, like, when I was at university and was looking to get a summer job, there was like an advert in the paper, and I had sort of like phoned it up. It was basically sort of charity chugging, but it was it was a little bit more involved. It was like sort of like door to door rather than sort of standing on the streets. I sort of got past the sort of training, and I did it for a day, and then I just phoned up and said, oh, it's just really not for me. But they were like using sort of like techniques to sort of get into people's houses, basically. Wow. Because once you're into someone's house, it's more difficult for them to ask you to leave. They feel more inclined to part with their money. They were obviously trying to get people to donate to charities, but just so they could get the commission. And they were quite open about how they didn't really care about the charities. They just cared about kind of making people sign up because that's how they got paid. And it was really gross, actually. Yeah. It was really horrible.
Okay, this is important intel, because now I can construct it. What if this is like Save the Swedish Seals or whatever?
Yeah.
And they're like, first rule, never speak, only grunt. Second rule, always approach an ATM.
It is. It's entirely possible that they've got like some kind of psychological profile breakdown for each person. So they were like, you know, this guy looks like grunting's going to work. This guy looks like this is going to work.
Yeah,
you know, find the weakness. Like, I once, this is going to sound like such a humble brag, but once I was walking to a tube station, and the charity person.
Okay, Katie, use public
transport. Yeah, that's the brag.
Oh, you're not claustrophobic. Big deal.
But the person like tried to catch my eye as I tried to walk past, and as I was sort of walking past them, they went, "Hey, Kate Moss, why don't you like give me some money?" And like it was like so flattering. And they were obviously like counting on that, you know, getting them a certain way. So I bet they were like, oh, that bitch looks vain. I'll call her Kate Moss. You know, like, well, you know, do you know what I mean? Like, so they.
Do you know
what
would be great as if you'd stuck around and they just call everybody Kate Moss?
Yeah.
Like, I remember once walking with my mum through Cardiff, and a guy sort of said to me, "Oh, can I talk to you and your sister?" And like, you know, be honest, sometimes I find that shit quite funny sometimes. we didn't give him any money, but
we've had it where people like sort of like go to the kid, you know, we'll go to the kids and go, "Oh, you guys, how are you doing?" And so which is that, and that's sneaky because the kids are like, someone's paying attention, and then you kind of hit with the real stuff, and then you're trapped.
Yeah, evil.
Gigging with evil a guy geniuses. Called this guy called Richard Perry. I'm not sure he does much stand up anymore, but he had this great joke about the fact that he was talking to a charity mugger, and he said, you know, they have ways of drawing you in. She was pretty and she said hello, which I always think is funny.
Legally, it's not a crime, is it? Because he willingly parted with the money.
Yeah, it's technically like
And even though he was intimidated, was he just intimidated because it was a guy who's bigger than him rather than banging? Yeah. I guess the forceful shoulder thing and the grunting that is intimidating.
That's over. Like, it's that great grey area, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it almost veers into. Because if it were me, I would definitely call it a crime.
Yeah.
And so we should use my barometer for it.
I also think, just getting too close to anyone at an ATM isn't cool.
That's not on.
Yeah, it's not on. If the question was, did this guy do a cool thing? No, not okay, not cool. But not is cool. It a crime?
Yeah, you know. Regardless, it's not cool. But Felix, we need to know: did you get a book from the bookshop? That's what I want to know. Did you make it to the antique bookshop?
Did you have enough money left?
Did he have enough? Yeah, because he's probably only got 100.
Did you have to go back to the ATM machine and have it happen 6 more times?
Yeah, then you'd be so scared to go back to the ATM. Anyway, we have. Thanks, guys. We totally solved that. We have made a difference yet again. Nick, we have just enough time to ask you, what have you got going on? Tell our listeners what they can look forward to from yourself.
So I'm currently in New Mexico filming a film called Maggie Moore's, which I guess will come out some point next year, maybe sort of this time next year, like autumn next year.
Cool.
Okay. There's more Ted Lasso in the pipeline, so that starts filming in January. And then I should do a little plug for a gig that I, like an annual benefit called Laugh for Leukemia that I help organise, which is for Blood Cancer UK. And we've run it for nearly 10 years now. And that is on the 5th of December at the Bloomsbury Theatre.
Oh, cool.
At 6:30, because it's a Sunday and it's winter, we thought.
Yeah.
Start it at 6:30. Ed Gamble is emceeing it. Oh, and we've got Sindhu V.
Love her.
Harry Hill, Joe Thomas, great. Flo and Joan, and Mr. Swallow, myself.
Nice.
And so it should be a fun night if anyone can make it. And we're not sold out by that point, which we're not at point of recording, but hopefully we will be by the time we get to the gig.
Can you tell us any more about the film?
Yeah, because they've announced it and everything. It's a thriller, I guess.
Ooh,
but it's
nice.
it's kind of got like a darkly sort of comic. It's totally really interesting. It's kind of like Fargo, I guess, in terms of tone.
Nice.
Like it's sort of set in this desert town where nothing kind of really happens, and then there's this, and it's based on a true story, true crime of I think in the 80s, where there was the murder of two women with the same name, and they don't know, and it's not solved. It wasn't solved. They don't know.
It's like Terminator.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of horrible in a way, but it's very, very loosely taking this idea, and they assume that it was like a contract killing that went wrong, like the guy got.
Do you know what?
Yeah,
I've read about this before when we've done like research to do sort of crimes for this. Yeah,
yeah.
I agree, because it's so horrible. It's kind of like it's not quite up the street for this podcast, but like it's an amazing like story. It's crazy.
Oh, it's crazy, and like so it's really obviously it's unlike anything I've ever done before. So. You know, I kind of feel very, very out of my depth, if I'm honest.
What is your role? Who are you playing?
John Hamm and I are detective partners. And
John Hamm.
We solved the crime. And Tina Fey is in it as well.
Wow, that's awesome.
Amazing.
John Slattery's directing it. Micah Stock's in it. Yeah, it's really fun, and everyone is like totally. It's just really everyone's sort of slightly off key in a really kind of interesting way.
It sounds amazing.
I'd be really intrigued to see it like once it's sort of all edited and put together, because I think it could be quite a fun one. As fun as, you know, the subject matter's not fun, but in terms of where they kind of find the fun in it, it's more that thing of people dealing with trauma, and when they deal with trauma, a lot of time they'll use humour as, and you know, so people who work in police or ambulance or, you know, they're seeing stuff day in day out, so they just are really detached from it,
the
and just
gallows humour,
quite cynical about it. Yeah, so it sort of takes, I guess, some of that. But yeah, it's good. It's good.
Oh, it sounds...
I'm excited.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Me too. And put in a good word to Tina for us.
God, she's great, right? Yeah.
Aww.
I guess. I mean, yeah, if we can be bothered. If we can be bothered having her on.
We book really far ahead, so we might not have a slot. But Nick, thank you so much. You have been the most amazing guest.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you for having
me. From Ben's Month, this has been Nick Mahoney.
Thank you. Oh, thank you, all of you.
Yeah,
how nice. Thank you for having me.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman with music by The Lion and the Wolf. You can follow us on Twitter at Drunk Women Pod and on Facebook and Instagram at Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. Also, if you've got a petty crime you want us to solve, then please write it in that review and we'll solve it. Thank you so much to Acast for hosting us, and thank you for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.